Big color, bigger savings. It's Sherwin-Williams' biggest super sale. Get 40% off paints and stains October 17th through the 27th with prices starting at $29.39. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
On this episode of Two Dudes, One Cart, John and I sit down to continue our Leveling Up Your Game series, and we're also going to talk about things going on in golf, why you suck, or do you suck? So stay tuned, sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of Two Dudes, One Cart podcast, and as always, we appreciate you listening. Well, all right, everybody, the boys are back together. Sitting here with John. John, how you doing tonight?
Oh, dude, if I was doing any better, I'd be you, buddy.
Well, I wanted to kind of continue our leveling up series, but let's get a little conversation going about this, all this stuff going around about guys that think they can take down these LPGA Tour players.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on that? I mean, I know we've seen some stuff on the YouTubes and we see how good they are, but yet we still got these guys roaming around that think that, oh, bring her to my home course, I'm gonna smoke her.
Yeah. I would say a majority of normal golf, non-professional male golfers, I would say probably 99.9% of them would get their ass whooped by the top LPGA player.
Yeah, I don't think they quite get the respect that they deserve, and I don't think that people really understand that their proximity with long irons is what your proximity or what a plus handicap players is with a 9-iron.
Yeah.
Or fairly close.
Yeah.
But I'm saying it's pretty close.
I mean, their putting's great.
Right.
And they're great putters. They're great with their wedges around the greens. Do they hit it 310 yards? No. Some of the top five probably can crank it up there into the 300s with the right conditions.
Right. How far down in the rankings of the LPGA do you think one has to go to where a plus handicap amateur golfer could actually viably win? And I'm not talking like the Matt Vogts of the world, stuff yeah. like that. I'm talking about your guy that's winning a club championship at his country club, those guys.
Yeah.
I mean, and I know there's outliers, but how far down do you think you have to go for that seems
Yeah, I mean, I said reasonable. Top 50, but that's probably not low enough. I mean, you could probably go down to, you know, top 75, top 100 even. You know, if I take our club champion or our King of the Hill champion and put them up, you know, the top 100, obviously I think the top 25, you're probably going to smoke them at least two, probably more, if they played a four-day series, did a four-day stroke play tournament, you know. They'd probably get smoked by at least two a day, probably four, closer to four. And then outside of that 50 to 100 range, maybe our guys would be able to compete with them on our course.
Right.
Now, if you play an LPGA course set up to those conditions, that might change too. I think it would be harder for the club pro or the local.
Even if you took a neutral course and you said, hey, for instance, let's just use foul. Okay, you're going to take a run at it and you're going to play whatever LPGA player and you're playing it. At foul, you're playing at a course that's going to challenge you, and it's not your home course. Because I mean, if you gave an LPGA player at any local country club in, you know, in the Indianapolis, well, Indiana area, and you let them get a couple practice rounds in, I don't think it's going to make much difference.
Yeah, I mean, especially Euland, like, there's holes out there, right? Like, even Blair, he's played Euland before, but it was a while, right, that he played that course. Like, second time around, he would have probably done a couple things different.
Yeah, but 10 years. I think what'll shine through in there is the consistency. I mean, you go over 4 days. This is the day in the life. This is average stuff for an LPGA player or most tournament players, whether that's Challenge Tour, whether that's Epson Tour or whatever. The consistency, yeah, I think, will shine through.
Yeah, I mean, because LPGA, you know, set up around, you know, 64 to 7,000 max-ish.
Yeah.
I see in 22, they played at 6760 at Mission Hills. You know, they have also played as low as 6325, which is how long Euland is from the tips, right?
Right.
At the minimums side. So you had a minimum max 62 to 6800. That's what most of us play at our local golf courses. And yeah, these chicks are playing, yeah, I'd say, more difficult courses than most of our local courses. The greens are going to be lightning. Conditions are probably perfect. So I don't think they're going to have any problem with I don't think distance is their problem when they're shooting, you know, 22 under on a 4-day weekend.
Yeah, and I think also the fact that we're getting to see what they're just at Erin Hills, I think. So the women are getting a chance now at some of the more predominantly male tournament location sites. So I think it's really going to show up when people get to see him play where the PGA plays basically on a lot of courses that are, you know, your Shinnecocks and stuff like that. I think that's really going to shine through. But I just struggle every time I hear somebody talk about that. And now, of course, we know Barstool Sports is getting behind that to get this going. And I think it's going to be an eye-opener.
Yeah, I just don't see any like disadvantage for the LPGA pro, right?
Right.
The courses are going to be easier. The distances are going to be the same, most likely, or real close to it either way. And I don't see anybody in our club championship playing Euland at, you know, six under both days.
Well,
but maybe.
And then you introduce, you know, are there going to be people there? There's going to be cameras there. Yeah. And, you know, you're always going to hear the excuse of, well, that's all they do, blah, blah, blah. Well, you're the one that said you wanted to challenge them.
It's like when Riggs always brings out those just shit talk.
Haters. Yeah.
Right. I'm just trying to think of anything that would make the LPGA be at a disadvantage. And it's skill. So, like, all the tiers are set up the same, besides the course conditions are probably going to be less, not as high quality as what the LPGA is used to playing. So I think the top 100 LPGA players could probably beat, you know, the top 5 lowest handicap players at every local course majority of the time.
Yeah, I would. That would be my guess too. I mean, you may have an outlier in there, but
yeah, I mean, that's golf though, right?
I just don't.
No one's Scotty.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only one Scotty Scheffler that's just proven that, or, you know, Tiger Woods in his day, that could be that consistent. But if you get the top 100 LPGA players and put them in a 200-person tournament against the top, you know, 5 handicap players at every Indiana club, private club, and they played from 6,400 yards, I think the LPGA is going to win 80 out of the 100 matches.
Oh, yeah. I definitely agree with that. I find it pretty hilarious. I'm sure there's somebody out there that could get it done because, you know, it's like the term any given Sunday. But if you do it over multiple days, I just don't see it happening. I just don't see guys putting up those kind of numbers consistently. And as long as the LPGA player is completely engaged with what's going on.
They take it serious.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they come out, let's say it's a Saturday, Sunday. They come out Friday. Right. They do their 2-hour warm-up routine. They go play a practice round Friday, so they're ready for Saturday, Sunday.
Right.
I think most of those, I think 80% of them get their ass whooped. I think that 20% of the, in Indiana at the, you know, whatever. So we got 2 people from each club, 5 people from each club. So, you know, you got 20 clubs in Indiana, let's say, you get five from each of them. Yeah, there's going to be some guys that just have a day, right? But it's going to be a minuscule amount compared to the majority.
Well, John, what do you think about, I know it's early, I know that Ryder Cup is coming. I find myself remembering the last Ryder Cup and now the fact that there's going to be money involved. And to be quite honest, it really turns me off about the event. That for some reason, these guys that are, you know, they're already making millions and millions of dollars, and now they're going to get paid to now play in the Ryder Cup.
Yeah. I mean, I don't care. It doesn't bother me either way. I kind of like the Olympics. We don't need to pay them to go play in the Olympics. It just seems that's the way everything's going. I bet you, you know, the PGA guys didn't complain that they're not getting paid to do it. There's probably one or two.
Yeah, but
it's all about the money.
It's just one of those things. You're like, dude,
you got the honor to play.
You just, yeah,
right.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Yeah,
you know, and you work to get there, and I understand that, but the fact that goes on your resume that you played in the Ryder Cup, you know, it disturbs me, and I just think it's another difference. You look at the European team, they're like, well, they don't want to be paid. They do it for country. They do it for play, and I would just much rather our guys be the same way.
I see both sides of it. I mean, I would rather just have them not get paid and go back to, like, kind of what I said about just the honor. Like, I appreciate the opportunity to be able to represent the United States and kind of bring back that, you know, call to duty. Even if it's just, hey, we'll pay you. We'll cover the USA, PGA, we'll cover the board and transportation.
Right.
No monetary gift or value, but, hey, we're taking care of rooms, bags, setups, and meals. Like, I get that, right? Just like you would do in a college event or any NFL team event when they're traveling, right? They're going to get a hotel block of rooms. They're all staying in the same place. They go eat all their meals together. That way there's a lot of camaraderie and getting the vibes right.
Well, it is what it is. I just don't care for that, but I'm not in charge of the money either.
Yeah.
So, John, how much does what we see and hear on television affect our expectations of our own golf game, do you think?
I mean, I don't watch PGA and go, oh, man. Now, back in the day when I used to watch the Masters, I will say, watching the majors, the three majors that I like, which you are in the same, minus the Open, right? I do get kind of jacked up. And I go,
oh yeah,
I'm going to go out and play really good after watching this.
Right.
But all other TV events doesn't do anything for me as far as, like, of my own game.
Yeah, I just think that you hear a lot of stuff that's not 100% correct on some broadcasts. I just wonder how many people take some of that stuff in consideration. Like, I know we've talked about in the past that, you know, we're only seeing 0.001% of the best in the world, and we're only seeing the highlights when somebody, you know, basically puts one to 2 or 3 feet. I mean, every once in a while, if you're in the final group, somebody might flare it right, you know, 160 yards out, might be left of a bunker and have to chip over the bunker. But I think that people watch that, just like you said, and they're like, oh, and they go out there and they have, you know, these guys make it look so easy, and then their expectations just mount, and then they're totally frustrated when they get on the first tee and duff one 40 yards, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's just called reality hitting you in the forehead. Even watching some of, like, I watched the last LIV games. I watched the Phil and Horvat 2v2s. I would get amped up if I was playing with Phil, and I was his partner. And, you know, another LIV invited me as a guest. Like, I would get amped up for that. Like, right, I would have some expectations. I'm going to play better golf with just being in that, the presence of them, right? And just like when I play golf with Jeremy, you know, it's just, I play better. Is there, we talk through the shots, kind of like when you and I talk through shots. Hey, do we hit just a full seven here? Do we bump it up to a six and go three quarter? You know, a lot of times I don't even, like with Jeremy, I don't even ask for the yardage. I just tell him to hand me a club. You know, I want him to shoot it and hand it, and I just won't even look at it.
I think that's a really good point that I don't want to pass up, is the fact that how often, let's say you're going to go out and play whatever the round is, how often are you mentally just kind of talking through that shot with yourself, where you're, let's say you're just in the rough and you're like, okay, I got 160 to the pin, maybe it's 140 to cover a bunker, got a little wind into, but then you're looking down at your lie, you're in the rough, and you're like, there's a good chance this is going to fly and not have any spin, or there's a chance I'm going to have some spin. So which of those numbers are you going to take? You're going to go, okay, my pin's 160, say your bunker's 140, are you just going to play like a 150 shot? And that way, I mean, do you talk it through like that in your head on a normal round?
Most time I'm just on autopilot if I'm playing by myself. You know, I don't know if I do a lot more when I play by myself and I'm not taking it as serious, going back, man, I should have done this. Where you know the shot you should hit, but, you know, the biggest one is you think your ball's like 30 yards off the fairway or off the green. You got a greenside bunker and you're like, oh, I'm going to have to flop it, right? And you get over there and you got plenty of grass between you and the flagstick. And instead of hitting the 60, you should go back to the cart, grab like a 54. So yeah, I think a good thing would be to think of like how much better would the average player play if he had a caddy with him, you know, 50% of the time when they're actually playing. Like, let's say you're in a men's club at a country club, right? You play Saturday and Sundays. Like if you got your own caddy every time that knew your game, knew your...
Big color, bigger savings. It's Sherwin-Williams' biggest super sale. Get 40% off paints and stains October 17th through the 27th with prices starting at $29.39. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Your distances, knew how you play.
Right.
Would you play better with that person walking through the entire 18 holes with you on Saturday and Sunday versus you going out there with just your regular foursome and you're playing individually all the time?
Yeah. What I was kind of leaning to is to see if you thought you played, that you hit better shots when you follow that process, like you're caddying for yourself internally, or maybe you're even, you know, you're pretty verbal on the course. We talked about this before. You kind of talk out loud. Yep. Do you feel like your shot and your result is better when you take that 4 or 5 seconds, take in the numbers and talk that shot out?
Yeah. I don't even know if it's any additional time for you or I, honestly. We might be able to shave on some of the times. We might be able to shave off 5 to 10 seconds. Or let's say 30 seconds. Let's be realistic. Probably 30 seconds, right? Going back and grabbing a different club or something. It just depends if I verbalize my thought process. I think we're all thinking of something when you first, you know, get out of the cart. You're gazing down at the green where the pin's at. You know, you're taking in where the bunkers are at, whether it's uphill, downhill, slope, where's the slope going on this green, like all that is coming at you instantly, right? And you, like I say, for me, probably for you, like we realize that really quick. I mean, by the time my foot gets out of the cart and hits the ground, I pretty much know what I want to do.
Yeah, and I do too, but I mean, if I'm in the fairway, it's a little different than when I'm in the rough, but I've noticed I've made a more conscious effort to really look at my lie.
Yeah.
You know, like if,
yeah, definitely in the rough.
If I'm on a little bit, yeah, if I'm a little bit on an upslope, even in the fairway, I'm like, okay, I need to get a little shoulder tilt with the slope because if not, I'm going to chunk it. If I'm in the rough, I have to think about whether or not how clean a contact I'm actually going to get on the backside of the ball to where I can, I mean, you can't always predict it, but to where you can go, there's some grass in between here. This is probably going to be a flyer. Yeah. So I probably need to dial back. And I've tried to make more of an effort to figure out what I need to carry, whatever it is, the front edge, what I got between that and the pin and wind. I've never done that a whole lot, but my game is trending to where if I do that and I talk those things out, the outcome is probably 85% better than ever. It's like picking a target off the tee. You know, if you get up there and you don't know where you're going, well, you're going to hit that. You're going to hit nothing because you don't know where you're going. But if you go up there and you pick an actual target And that's what you're swinging towards. I found a lot of times for me with driver, that's been working out really well, is to have a thought process of where I want this ball to go, right or wrong. Yeah, I may put myself in hazard, never played there. But I was just curious if you ever saw that same pattern and when you're playing, because I think it's super helpful, especially if somebody's just starting out in the game. If you keep that stuff going, then you get into the speeds that we play normally, because you start, that stuff just starts clicking right when you're getting out of the cart. Okay, I feel some wind. I probably should go up a club. Yep. You know, I'm on the fairway. I should be good with this as a number, and, you know, it's going to land and roll out. You know, I'm pitching to a number, and I'm playing for some rollout. For sure. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, whether you vocalize that or you just go through it internally in your mind, right, I think that's good. I mean, I would say, similar to you, the rough, I'd take a little bit more time. Coming down the fairway in a cart, you can see where your ball's at in the fairway. Minus being in a divot, right, you're going to have a good lie. Right? So it's not really a lie thing. All you're going to be looking at is pin location, distance to the hole, front, middle, back, whatever, slope. And then you're looking at wind, right? Or potentially if it's early or afternoon round, right? Early, you know, if the ground's wet, you're going to get create more spin. Ball's not going to go as far, like Mickelson always describes in a lot more detail. But in the rough, like yesterday on hole, the par five, I pulled it left rough. You know, I was in between. I was like, I grabbed a 3-wood out until I got over to the ball. But the ball was sitting too far down for me to hit a good contact with the 3-wood. So then I went back out, just grabbed a 5-iron. And punched it 200 yards.
Right. Yeah, I think it's good information that people are listening to see if they do it. I don't care if you've played for 20 years or you're a plus handicap. Any of that could help your game. You may do it already. You may not do it. But I think it's really good. It's been really good for me, especially even in the fairway when you're on a, depending on the course, but if you're on a link style course where you've got some undulations in the fairway and your ball may be sitting up or down a little bit, looking at that and understanding what potential hazards could happen for you just making contact with this ball, as opposed to not looking at it at all and then wondering why you chunked it, and then looking down and go, oh, you know what? I probably should have just tilted my shoulders with the slope a little bit, or ball below your feet, should have took a little bit longer club, all the normal stuff you should do. And we say it's normal, but some of our listeners, they're probably like, you're supposed to do that?
Yeah, some people probably wouldn't,
you know,
that.
The ball above your feet. Yeah, ball above your feet supposed to draw, ball below your, supposed to cut. It doesn't always happen. You'd be surprised what your hands can do to shut the face to keep that ball straight when you think it's going to cut and all of a sudden you hit a bullet straight out of there. We've all had that happen and paid for it. So my next question is kind of like, do amateurs actually suck at golf, or are we better than we think we are in the fact of, like, going back a little bit to the TV, going back to what we see? I think that a lot of it comes down to we don't give ourselves as much credit as probably we should and feel more positive about our game. You know, a lot of the people in our normal golf group, you know, we're out, you know, 150, 160 yards, you're hitting the green. We don't have too many people that are getting wayward from that distances. We play with some pretty damn good golfers, and we're a pretty big sample size of what the amateur community, if you will. And that's why I'm saying, do you think we have these lousy expectations? And that, and it could fall play. It could be the same thing if you're watching creator-style golf. You know, you're seeing this, and you're like, wow, I wish I was that good. And you're like, but are you really that far off? I mean, you may have a little kink in your short game, or maybe your putting's not great, or you're having trouble off tee. Whatever it is, you know, if you dialed that in, what would your round look like? I think it's come down to, I don't know how wise it is to really base everything off your actual score at the end of the round. It comes down to, you're a 40-hour working week guy or 60-hour working week guy. You really don't hit the range. You're out here, you're shooting whatever, you know, 90s, but how many shots were you really horrible at?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean,
I just wonder, do we beat ourselves up? Do we really suck, or is it just the fact that we're just kicking our own ass mentally for stuff that we shouldn't?
Well, we've talked about it a lot. You know, I mean, if I were to go out and play basketball right now, I would absolutely, I don't even know if I could hit the rim, you know, in the first 10 shots and done it. So the people that play, you know, 10 rounds a year, it's like, what expectations do you have? You can't have many, you know?
No, I totally agree. And I like to talk it out because I want people to listen to this and understand, like, you know, I know we've had this conversation on several podcasts to a certain extent, maybe not on the exact same topics, but if that would be, I think, the best thing for amateur golf, that if people started to understand that, hey, you're really not playing that bad. Yeah. You're really not.
Don't keep score.
You think you are, but you're not.
Don't keep score. If you're only going to go play golf times a year, why do you even need a scorecard?
I think it's just because that's just, I know it's in women too, but I think whenever we're playing a sport, there has to be a winner and there has to be a loser. You want to know where you stack up. It's competitive nature. I don't know too many people that we play golf with that aren't competitive.
Yeah. I mean, it just depends on what the game, I mean, if there's a game or if there's no game, I don't really give a crap. And there's no winner. What'd you win? No, you can't win anything. You shot the lowest round today. Big whoop. Right. We weren't playing for anything.
Right.
You know,
how often do you think it is that we are just attempting shots that are outside of our talent level that cost us a significant amount of strokes in a round? I mean, how often do you think that?
Yeah, rounds you're going to try something that you probably shouldn't try.
Well, it's like we were talking in the rough. You know, I've seen people all the time, you know, want to take a wood or a hybrid into some rough. And I'm like, even if it's bare heather and you have spots, I'm like,
yeah,
that's really a bad call. in my book, I'm like, that ball's going to start low and you're going to hit a heather stalk and it's just going to go straight down. You know, at some point you got to be like, let's minimize the damage. Let's just, you know, go to maybe a pitching wedge or not something to get the ball up quick and get out of there. But I think that's more often is the case where everybody's trying to pound it down there. Get it as close as you can. And you take a shot that's super high risk. Yep. Let's say if the risk level is 0 to 10, I bet a high percentage of guys are playing at the 8.
Yeah. So you'll get a kick at this. A kick out of this. So yesterday, Loeffler and I were playing, you know, from the golf trip. I hit it on 9 into 18 fairway, but I didn't hit it far enough into 18 where I had a clear shot to go up and over the trees. So then I got a roll of like 10 trees, 10 yards apart from each other. Hey, Mike, I'm just going to hit this punch cut 4-iron between one of these two groups of trees. And I'm 200 out. I'll just have it roll right up there. And he goes, 19 handicap now. Right. So I have a 19 handicap telling me, just play it up to 18 and hit it on the green, get your free drop, chip it up onto 9 and call it a day. I go, ooh, let's do that. You know, because that could hit a tree, come back, had a tree go left or right either way. I could go straight and it doesn't cut and you're out of bounds. But I think you get overconfident in a shot or you try something that is very, you know, if you're a stats, I don't know, somebody that likes stats, however you say that.
Statistician.
You're not going to hit on, if you're playing blackjack, you're not going to hit on 20 very often. And that's not what that shot was. It's my 1 out of 20 shot of me actually hitting a punch cut 200 yards out and thinking I ended up on the green.
Yeah. When I was thinking about this for this podcast, I had to chuckle because it reminds me of one of the funniest things you've ever said on the golf course to me. We're at West Chase and I cannot remember what the hole number is, but the green's kind of hidden behind some trees. And I want to say it's a reasonable par 4. I was playing okay, but I was struggling. And we're down there in the fairway, and I've got those trees in my way. And you're like, well, just hit it out there to the left, and then you can just chip up on there. And I take a 6-iron, and I go right up over the tree. And you're like, well, I didn't know you were dialed. You know, go straight at the flag.
Yeah, either way.
What do you think the 5 major failures are for amateurs on the golf course? I think we narrowed down that's one, is that the fact that you're just taking way more risk than necessary. Yeah. And I'm not saying this for the guy that's playing 10 times a year. I'm not saying this to you, although you could score better if you played a different way. But, you know, I know we all say, hey, man, layups for basketball. With some course management, save yourself, you know, 2, 3, depending on the guy, 8 strokes of just eliminating dumb risks. You know, it's like, hey, I can hit this 10-foot window, although I couldn't hit a 40-yard wide fairway.
Yep.
What do you think the other ones
are? Yeah, so if we got course management, another right? One from you? That's why I think, like, those, you know, playing lessons are really good because your pro will talk you right through the course management. I would say one would be right off the bat, and it's the first thing you do to, when you get to the course, is, like, properly warming up.
Right.
I mean, that's not just hitting balls. That's stretching, rolling some putts, hitting a couple chips, you know, maybe hit a pitching wedge, a 7-iron, and some type of utility wood, and then go chip 5 or 10 balls, and then go roll 10 putts. I don't know how many times. Well, I know I never practiced chipping at Euland. The last 3 rounds at Euland, I didn't even putt because, like, oh, I already know these greens, right? And they can change every day. So I think that's a big one, is before you even golf, you got to be ready to golf. And so, right, I think if you are conscious and make a repetitive motion on, you know, your warm up before the round, I think that would be a big help for golfers.
Okay. So we have course management, warm up. I think club selection is also huge. It's, you know,
yeah, you're going to come up short more than you're going to go long.
And that's what the statistics show. It's high. I mean, it's upwards 80-some percent, I think, if I looked it up, maybe be higher than that, that amateurs constantly come up short, do not take enough club. And mixed into that is going to be knowing the distances of your clubs.
Yeah.
And sometimes you find out that day, you don't, I mean, like we said, you don't play a lot. You know, typically maybe your 9-iron's going, you know, 140. Today you may be striping it and it's going 155, or it's only going 130.
Yeah, you don't know.
But that's the thing that you're going to have to figure out. You're going to have to know, hey, man, on the last hole, I just didn't hit this well. I'm going to go up a club. And, you know, it's just knowing what your numbers are.
Yeah.
I think that's probably number 3.
Yeah, and I think that goes – and that you can touch that into the warm-up too, right? Your 7-iron and a 3-wood, every single time when you go to the range, you know what about what your wedge is going to go. If you actually – you know, use your rangefinder and get a target out there for your pitching wedge, so you know plus or minus whatever you're at. Same thing with your 7-iron, whatever. Right. So that will help.
Agree.
And then, God, what other some other stupid stuff? I mean, we kind of talked through it. And I don't know if it's just course management. Probably just pre-shot routine could come into course management, but just make sure you're set. When you set up over the golf ball, you're going to do the same thing every single time.
Yeah, I think that would be solid number 4s, is we just call it like posture, grip alignment.
Yep. You take 2 practice swings, make stand sure behind the golf ball, hit it. Take 2 practice swings, stand behind the ball, hit it.
And it's also what I think the other thing that people don't realize is that when you develop, and eventually that just becomes a routine, is the fact that it's, if you're in a pressure situation, it's kind of calming.
Yeah, one less thing
you
to happen.
Maybe you go back, you look behind it, it's like, you know, this is a normal shot. And it just gets so ingrained. I think the other one is having, especially for amateurs, it's just having something you can use consistently around the greens. Whether that's maybe you're a guy that's just a, you know, a little putting stroke with a pitching wedge to get you onto the green. Yeah. You know, having, whether you're a Bryson DeChambeau or whatever, and you're using, or like Mickelson a little bit, is using the clock dial in a way to bring the club back. You know, I want to feel like I'm at 4:30, or I want to feel like I'm at 8 o'clock, whatever you're using, or maybe you're, however you want to do it. But I think having something like that in your arsenal, I think that is beneficial, and that could probably fall under club selection. But I think that's where a lot of us lose a lot of strokes, is right around the green. You know, that dreaded one that's about a foot off in the rough from the fringe, and the green's sloping away from you, and you're like, man, it's sitting down. I want to leave it in there with a putter, you know, those type of things.
Yeah. I mean, that's a tough one. You know, I watched that Peter Finch, that short game specialist dude, or whatever, that European dude that's always giving the chipping lessons to all those people you see the shorts on. And he's like, you know, where do your hands finish? You know, that's not me. You know, but I do agree, when I'm playing my best golf and striking the ball the best, it's the 3-quarter feel, right? So I have to feel like I'm at, you know, 10 o'clock with my hands, maybe 9, and then turn. It's actually closer to 11 or 12 o'clock, but that's what I got to think to myself.
Right. Yeah, I think those are pretty good five. Let's just call it necessary course management skills, because a lot of that are under course management. Yeah. And it really comes down to just knowing your golf game. If you're laying up on a par five and you're like, man, I don't know what to hit, but you really flush your seven iron the most, just hit your damn seven iron.
Yeah.
Get it up there and move on. You don't have to hit a four iron. Almost hitting a four iron is not as good as flushing your seven iron. Yeah. I don't think amateurs suck as much as they think they do. I think we're a lot harder on ourselves. And I think from a mental game perspective, that we are applying the pressure to ourselves. It's nobody else. Yes, in everything you do, you want to do it well. You want to play well. And that's completely understandable. But how much time do you put in it? You know, if you're an apprentice carpenter, you're not expected to start on Monday and by Tuesday that you're building a dresser or you're building a house or whatever. You know, you have to learn. All of us are semi-apprentice golfers at this point, no matter how long we've been playing. We're not putting that effort in.
I mean, even the old guys at my club that play 3 days a week, 4 days a week, you know how often they're doing a range session, like a true practice session?
Right. Sure. They're not?
Yeah, they just don't do it.
They're just out there having a good time.
And that's okay. And they have to be okay with their results, right? And they have to manage their own expectations, right? And that's why they love the handicap game, because they shoot between X and X 90% of the time. One other thing I thought was real funny before I brought this up, I put this in the group chat. Did you see the Zach Blair going to Golf Galaxy?
Oh, my God. Yes, because I commented on it. I said, I like the Dunes t-shirt. I said, if you know, you know. And I said, Zach, I'd love to have you on the podcast if you're interested. Yeah. But that was hilarious.
That was the best thing. So for people that don't know, Zach Blair, who's playing at the 3M golf tournament this weekend, went into a Golf Galaxy to get a new driver, and the fitter had no idea who he was and called him, he's probably a plus one handicap, and he thought he could be.
Oh, he said he was a one. And then they asked him what's his handicap, and he said he was a 2.5, and he goes, you think so he's better than you. Do you think he could beat you? And he's like, that guy's like, no.
I don't think he's better than me, but.
Yeah, I was loving that, dude.
That was great.
I often wonder, a lot of those guys, I mean, they could all do it. You know, not everybody's a Scottie Scheffler, Max Homas, Justin Thomas, you know, those type guys. There's a lot of those guys that could just walk, like Mad McNeely or somebody like that. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of those guys could walk right in there and nobody has any idea who the hell they are. And they're just sit there. And just.
Yeah.
Well, John, I just wanted to jump on here and we'll see what everybody thinks. We're trying some new video software, trying some new audio recording stuff. So we wanted to do that. It's a little bit of an experiment, as well as getting this podcast out. We got a lot of stuff coming up. We got some guests in the pipeline. We got our EA Karts interview that we keep talking about will be out next month, because we got a lot of backlog, which is always a good thing for us. And hopefully
he said that was good to go whenever, so that'll be cool.
And hopefully we can get back on the ball with having a lot of guests, and maybe we move back to, we were doing the Tuesday and Thursday podcast. We'll see how that goes. But as always, we appreciate everybody that's listening. Yep. Comment, follow, subscribe. We definitely need that. Check out our YouTube channel. And great things coming for Two Dudes, One Cart podcast. That's for sure.
Been a lot of fun.
Hey, everybody. Once again, thanks for listening. And don't forget, you can tune in this coming Thursday for an interview with Mr. Bob Kitchen of Maple Hill Golf. Once again, thanks for listening and have a great week and get after it.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits started just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com apply.